You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Welcome to another round of Boardroom or Miro Board. Today we talk retrospectives with Agile coach Maria. Let's go. First question. You've spent 2 hours in a team retro, but the only input you've heard is Dave's. Boardroom or Miro Board?
Boardroom. In Miro, Dave can't hog the space because everyone can add thoughts anonymously, online, at the same time.
Correct. Next. You need the team to act on feedback fast, so you turn all those retro notes into Jira tasks instantly.
Miro all the way. And I can assign those tasks to teammates.
You're nailing this. Now, you see hundreds of sticky notes from the retro. A real mess. But you organize them into 5 themes in just seconds.
Miro, I basically get back an entire hour when I use its AI tools for clustering.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people running actually enjoyable and actionable retros in Miro. Get your first 3 boards free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
From the CIA, scared the children of the land. Blood on his face and a goat in his hand. His name is Chupacabra.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk.
Welcome to Monster Talk, the skeptical podcast about cryptids, science, and skepticism, brought to you by Skeptic Magazine. I'm your host, Blake Smith, and together with Dr. Karen Stolznow, linguist and skeptical investigator, and Ben Radford, managing editor of Skeptical Inquirer magazine and skeptical investigator, we talk about monsters. Today, on Monster Talk, we discuss the mysterious creature known as the Chupacabra. We turn to one of our co-hosts to leverage their expertise on the topic. Ben Radford just completed a manuscript for a book on this Latin American vampiric creature, and Karen and I interview him to find out many things, but Ben assures us there's much, much more in his upcoming book. Let's get to the interview.
Monster Talk.
Okay. Tonight we're joined by Benjamin Radford.
Rayburn.
To discuss the Chupacabra.
Yeah.
Ben, you're one of our regular panelists, so this is the first time we've actually interviewed our own team.
Seems the tables have turned.
Yes. Now you're the interviewee.
Uh-oh.
All right. Okay, well, let's go. Let's see. Ben, just on the off chance that our guests don't know about what a chupacabra is, can you tell us about the chupacabra, what it is, where it comes from, its defining characteristics?
Sure. I mean, it's sort of like, what is the Bigfoot? Of course, you're talking about something that that's never been proven to exist, and so everybody has their own particular take on it. In the case of the Chupacabra, and let me just state at the outset that there is a minor debate as to whether it's Chupacabra or Chupacabras with an S at the end. I've gotten some kind of cranky emails from people who insist on correcting me, although I usually just use the singular without the S because it's more common.
And where did they come from?
Well, there are a couple of different theories about that. Essentially, it appeared more or less out of the blue in 1995, Puerto Rico. There's a variety of theories about where they came from. One of the most popular ones is that it's the result of top secret U.S. government genetic experiments, sort of like the Frankenstein element to it. And there's also an element of anti-Americanism that sort of permeates the mythology of the Chupacabra, not only in Puerto Rico, but in Latin America in general. And so that's sort of where it basically came from. The other theory is that the Chupacabra is essentially an extraterrestrial or an extraterrestrial's pet. There are a couple of people who believe that that aliens visited Puerto Rico in 95 and were abducting people and doing their usual stuff, and they left behind what's essentially their dog, and it became the Chupacabra. One of the things that's interesting about the Chupacabra is that it basically appears in two very different forms. The original Chupacabra from Puerto Rico, based on one basically original sighting, is about 4 to 5 feet tall. It has long limbs. It's got red wraparound eyes, sort of like alien eyes. Some people say it has fangs. It has very distinctive spikes down its back and things like that. Oddly enough, the only Chupacabras that have been actually found, or, you know, animal, let's just say...
Alleged Chupacabras.
Alleged Chupacabras, yes. Animal carcasses that were claimed to be Chupacabras are all canids. So they're all dogs, wolves, foxes, coyotes, things like that, which, of course, look nothing like what I just described. So there's a very interesting dimorphism of the morphology of the Chupacabra, which I discuss in my book that'll be coming out next year on the Chupacabra.
So where does the actual name Chupacabra come from? Doesn't it mean goat sucker?
Yeah, it does. Yeah, there's some debate about who actually created the word, coined the word. There's a comedian, a Puerto Rico comedian, that claims he did. Someone else says he's full of it. I don't know, and frankly, I don't care. But basically, yeah, it means goat sucker. In a way, it's interesting because the name is very similar to that of Bigfoot, wherein, you know, we don't know what Bigfoot is, so it's really known for what it leaves behind. And, of course, in the case of Bigfoot, it leaves behind large footprints. In the case of the Chupacabra, it leaves behind sucked goats, basically animals that have been supposedly had their blood sucked out of them. So everything from livestock, chickens, goats, dogs, cats, you name it.
It'd be cooler if we called it the Exsanguinator.
Yeah, well, yeah, that sounds like a
wrestling name. Yeah,
there
I guess
go.
It does. Oh, well, you know, it's not good though. Now I just realized because it still doesn't specify goats. So Chupacabra really kind of gets it all together there.
So getting back to the Chupacabra, what's the history of the creature? Because you were saying that it started appearing in the 1990s.
Yeah, it basically again appeared more or less, you know, out of the blue in 1995 in a little place called Canovanas, just outside of San Juan, Puerto Rico. And that has always been one of the main mysteries of the Chupacabra. One of the central mysteries is, where did it come from? I mean, if you, in the case of animals such as, or alleged animals like Bigfoot or Loch Ness Monster or what have you, there's, you know, people who claim, well, if you look at old stories, you know, dating back, you know, the Indian stories, Native American legends, etc., they try and basically corral and manufacture old legends and myths to, you know, basically as historical evidence for these creatures. In the case of Chupacabra, there is none. I mean, there simply is no real precedent before that. There's one researcher who believes, named Scott Corrales, who believes that an earlier version of the Chupacabra was seen in the town of Moca. And so there's in the Chupacabra literature, you'll see reference to the vampire of Moca, which I think occurred in the late 70s. Although, again, it was basically a collection of a few dead animals that were supposedly sucked of blood. And then basically it wasn't seen for 20 years after that.
Okay, they make those drinks down there. the Mochaccinos.
Wow. That was worth it.
Okay, totally worth it. All right. Okay, sorry. You do go on.
That's basically the you know, where it came from. And again,
sorry, is the vampire of Mocha well known? Is that like or is it kind of obscure?
It's kind of obscure. It's really best known in reference to either cattle mutilations or the Chupacabra stories. But it is interesting because it does bring in the whole vampire element to it, because you know, the Chupacabra is unique among, you know, cryptozoological creatures. Certainly, you know, the big ones, like, you know, Bigfoot isn't known for sucking blood or necessarily attacking people. Same with Ogopogo or the Mothman or what else have or what have you. In the case of the Chupacabra, of course, that is one of its defining characteristics, is it is vampiric and it does suck blood, which, of course, opens up some very interesting questions as to what sort of animal, you know, could it be, where could it come from.
Is it treated as a natural animal or a supernatural animal? I know they bring this alien element into it, but is there anything about the killings that makes it supernatural, or is that just what the eyewitnesses are seeing? Or why is it not just an animal? Why do they think there's a special kind of creature doing this?
Well, it really depends on who you talk to. There's a very strong UFO enthusiast presence in Puerto Rico. It's actually surprisingly large, given the location and the size of the island. And so one of the reasons that you do have such a significant group of people who are attributing aliens and UFOs origins to the Chupacabra is because of groups of those people. There are also evangelical Christians who believe that the Chupacabra is a sign of the end times. The Chupacabra has been sort of roped into Christian end times theology. For example, I was reading one reference that the guy was talking about how in the book of Revelation it talks about horrific beasts coming out and attacking people. And so this person believes that that along with some of the other biblical creatures, the Chupacabra was foretold in the Bible. It's really interesting. You have basically a wide variety of people sort of corral the Chupacabra into their own personal agendas and how they see the world. But I think most people, as far as I can tell, either don't believe it exists, or those who believe that it exists in some form think it's probably a natural creature of some sort.
So, Ben, you were speaking about cattle mutilations and vampires. I've heard that the Chupacabra is often supposedly linked to satanic cults. What do you know about that?
There's an element of that. Supposedly, the main connection is that the exsanguinated victims can basically be attributed to either satanic cults or aliens abducting cattle for their own bizarre nefarious purposes, or the Chupacabra. So that's sort of one of the most fascinating elements of it, is that you can have the same animal that can appear to have been sucked to blood, and if it appeared in, let's say, October of 1995 in Puerto Rico, it would have been clear evidence that the Chupacabra was there. If you had seen that in 1978 in New Mexico, that would have been attributed probably to extraterrestrials. And if that same creature had been found dead, say, in the Midwest in the mid-1980s, it would be the work of satanic cults. So you have exactly the same evidence being interpreted in very different ways.
So have there been any attacks on humans? Supposedly, because we've got an equivalent in Australia, the bunyip, which you might have heard of. And attacks not only other animals, but also humans.
Well, one of the interesting things about the Chupacabra is that it apparently has not attacked any humans. There are a couple stories that, you know, as is typical, of course, in this field, once you actually look into the stories and do a little digging, they fall apart pretty quickly. There was one guy in Mexico, I believe, who claimed that he had been attacked by Chupacabra. I think it later turned out he'd been in a bar fight and didn't want to tell his wife. There are no reliable, credible human victims of the Chupacabra, which is interesting, given the fact that it appears to have no compunctions about attacking a wide variety of other animals.
What are some of the most infamous sightings or stories of the Chupacabra? What are some of your classic stories?
As far as the Puerto Rican Chupacabra, the original and most influential sighting was by a woman named Madeline Tolentino. And she claimed that she had actually seen this creature outside of her mother's house in Puerto Rico. And she gave a very, very detailed, lengthy description to local UFO investigators, and I use the phrase very loosely, who got interested in it and wanted to write this up for their UFO newsletters. And she talked about just at length, in fact, in Scott Corrales' book, Chupacabras and Other Mysteries, he reprints her interview at length and in detail. And she talks about exactly how big it was and how many fingers it had on each limb, the fact that it had no genitalia. I mean, she's just going into amazingly detailed description here.
How long did she see it?
Well, she's fuzzy on that. Apparently, it was at least 10, 15 minutes, according to her. I mean, there are lots of very vague parts of this story. She also claims that her mother chased it into a nearby field and that a local teenager grabbed the chupacabra, forced its mouth open, looked in its mouth for, I don't know, gum or dentures or something, let it go, and then it hopped off into the sunset.
Wow.
So, well, yeah, I'm paraphrasing here.
I'm
making it sound much more credible than it actually was.
Did the other two people corroborate the story?
Oh, that's a good question, Blake. No.
Oh.
Not
okay.
As far as I know. Okay. Oddly enough, it seems that the UFO investigators, I'm using scare quotes here, the UFO investigators apparently never bothered to actually ask anyone else. They basically just got her story and said thank you and walked away. But her sighting is probably the most important sighting, the most important chupacabra sighting in history, because it became her description essentially became the default description of the chupacabra.
She's case zero.
Yeah, she's case zero, exactly. So if you do a Google image search for chupacabra, you'll find a variety of photos and this and that, but the majority of them will be based upon her description, which actually she worked with a guy named Jorge Martin, and he did a sketch based on her description that basically went worldwide. And so
it became the template.
It became the template, and so her sighting is really the most important one in terms of when you look up in cryptozoology books and monster books, one of the first things they'll talk about, oh, it's 4 to 5 feet tall, spikes on the back, red eyes, this and that and the other. That came directly from Tolentino's sighting and a couple of follow-ups as well.
Quick skeptic point here. You know, I say it became the template just because we don't know. I mean, I guess for people who think the story is true, it became the wanted poster. But
right.
Again, one of the ongoing observations that we've got is that people tend to become primed for these kind of sightings and then use those templates as the things that they use to fill out their picture of the monster.
Absolutely. And in fact, in that particular sighting, I don't want to give too much away, but I actually found a really remarkable piece of evidence about that original sighting that I'll maybe we'll revisit on a future.
Yeah, let's wait till your book comes out on that one.
Well, Ben, you said that it hopped away, and I have read some accounts that claim the creature moves like a kangaroo.
Yes,
is that the sort of prototype as well?
Again, it depends on which description you're reading. In my research for the book, I read probably a dozen different books on that were describing it, and you'd be hard pressed to find any that exactly matched. Some writers basing their description on some eyewitnesses say that it had wings, and it basically is like a pterosaur or something that flies around in the night skies. Other books and other eyewitnesses say that it hops like a kangaroo and has a long tail. Other eyewitnesses say it doesn't have a tail at all, but instead has spikes down the back. So it's actually amazing. There's an amazing diversity. One might say an impossible diversity of characteristics in the chupacabra.
Yeah, I've seen recreations that included flight as part of its powers. At least the ability to jump up into trees and jump out of trees, and on the adventures beyond. I don't want to call it a documentary. I'm not sure what that is.
No, that's giving it far too much credibility.
That's making it sound like a Spring Hill Jack.
Oh, it was a lot like Spring Hill Jack with glow-in-the-dark eyes. Glowing eyes, I guess. Here's a question for you, though. So we've talked about what the creature looks like in its initial incarnation, and yet somehow once it gets onto the mainland of North America, it becomes a canid. Or at least the canid creatures are described as chupacabras. So how does that – I mean, that doesn't make any sense to me from a biological perspective. And for people in cryptozoology who are serious about it and are treating it as mystery animals, obviously there's a huge disconnect between an alien hybrid jumping creature and an animal that looks like a hairless dog. So what did you find out about the origin of that assignation of title?
Well, what you find is that even though the word chupacabra, as Karen mentioned, literally means goat sucker, what it really means in a much more realistic sense is just something that's unknown or unexplained. It's sort of a boogeyman. It's a scapegoat. So if, for example, you have get it, scapegoat.
Yeah,
I thought you liked that.
Yeah.
that was for you, man.
Thanks.
So what you have, for example, is that if you have livestock or, again, a dead dog, chicken, what have you, that for whatever reason someone comes across and for whatever reason someone thinks is mysterious, especially if he's of Hispanic origin or speaks Spanish, as you often find in Latin America and also in Texas and other places, it's very likely that the first explanation that will jump to mind is, this is the victim of chupacabra. And so what you find is that again, anything that anybody finds weird for whatever reason is automatically becomes a chupacabra, even if it has no relation whatsoever to anything at all, certainly nothing resembling Madeline Tolentino's original sighting or anything else. And so, I mean, I've had people show me a Jenny Hanover, which is basically a cut up a devil fish. It's a cut up and dried skate that's made to it's basically a sort of carnival gaff, a faked animal that was claimed to be chupacabra. Now again, this is a dried, cut up, smelly thing that doesn't remotely resemble either a canid or the original Puerto Rican chupacabra. So again, that's one of the characteristics of it is it's...
Yes, it's a placeholder for mystery.
Exactly.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about, the stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or say Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like I'd seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose. It kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and Wagon.
I'm Jane Perlez, longtime foreign correspondent and former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. I've been a foreign correspondent in lots of places, Somalia, Indonesia, Pakistan, but nowhere as important to the world as China.
I mean, China is not dropping anti-democratic paratroopers into Montana. But of course, we did see things like the weather balloon / spy balloon riveting the whole country for a week.
This is Face Off, an 8-part series in which we'll take you behind the scenes to key moments in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. we'll speak with a diplomat, a spy, a tech reporter, a U.S. admiral, even Yo-Yo Ma. Plus, my pal and noted China historian Rana Mitter joins the conversation. We'll look at what's driving the two nations apart and explore whether anything can help bring them back together. Face Off launches April 9th.
So what you find is that as you said, after the Chupacabra made the jump, either physical or metaphorical, to the mainland, it suddenly changed form and it became a canid. So one of the original sightings, one of the most important ones, after 1995, happened in Nicaragua. In August 2000, there was a farmer named Jorge Talavera who had a ranch and a farm outside of Managua. And he had been experiencing predation, and he, I think he had something like a dozen animals that had been supposedly mysteriously drained of blood. And he went out one night, and he saw this, what he believed and claimed was a chupacabra, actually two of them, attacking his livestock. And he shot at it in the dark, and it ran away. And a couple of days later, one of his ranch hands found the skeleton that had been picked over by predator birds at that point of this weird, mysterious, canid creature that had almost no fur, and it just looked very unusual. And at that point, he called his boss, Mr. Talavera, out on the ranch, and he decided that he had, in fact, killed a chupacabra, and he was convinced that he was the first person in history to do so. And that was really the first case, again, that was in 2000, where there was a body. Before that, the chupacabra, all we had were chupacabra eyewitness sightings. You know, someone says they saw something. And you also had alleged chupacabra victims. So you had chickens, goats, what have you, that either were drained of blood or were thought to have been drained of blood. But nobody had, you know, found an actual dead specimen that you could poke at and examine, whatever else, until the August 2000 Nicaragua sighting.
It seems that most of the sightings and stories are centered around the Americas. Do you know of this creature or variants existing in other cultures?
Well, that's an excellent question, and it sort of depends on which thread you're following. Of course, if you're following the vampire thread, that'll take you, certainly if you're looking at Slavic vampires, that'll take you back to Europe, of course, in the 14th, 15th, 1600s. And you can go back to the vampire mythos and Vlad the Impaler and all those sorts of things. And of course, that particular vampire is only one of many vampires that exist around the world in different cultures. So you have vampire myths in Africa and Asia and elsewhere. So if if the thread that one follows is the vampire one, then certainly it's part of a much broader context of vampires. And in many ways, it's a very specialized vampire, specifically sort of a product of the Puerto Rican culture and mythology. In terms of a chupacabra-like creature elsewhere, there isn't really one. I sort of see the chupacabra as being a very sort of brand-specific animal, partly because of its name. I mean, the El Chupacabra is Hispanic. It involves, obviously, Spanish-speaking. It involves cattle. Obviously, it's a product of an agrarian society. And so, again, there certainly are other sort of quasi-vampiric creatures around the world. The Chupacabra, unlike many of those, essentially came into existence in one very specific particular place in time, and then spread from there. So since that time, there have been chupacabra sightings I've read some reports that say they're in Russia, certainly throughout Latin America, Nicaragua, Honduras, Costa Rica, Chile, Argentina, Brazil.
I heard once in Australia in Perth back in the 1990s.
Really?
But the creature sounds a little bit like the Lugaroo or Rougarou. Mm-hmm. Those characters that you've got in, like, Louisiana and the swamps. Mm-hmm. Don't you think, Blake?
I think
some of your southern creatures.
Oh, we have all kinds of things down here. Or do we?
Ooh.
The question I have, and this kind of ties into that, I mean, you've got animals being killed, and this is kind of a mystery to me because we talked about it in a recent episode. When these animals die, things happen to the bodies. And especially if they're being predated, there's going to be parts missing. But my question is, does the evidence actually support the idea that these creatures are really drinking the blood? I mean, the photos that you and I looked at, Ben, and some of the video I've looked at, when they cut these animals open, they didn't look bloodless to me. I mean, blood wasn't pouring out, but you would expect it to congeal over time, right? I mean,
yeah, you would think. In fact, one of the videos I showed you was from the Beyond Bizarre. And it really was beyond bizarre because the narrator is talking about how the people in the video are cutting open this animal that has clearly been drained of all blood. Yet on the screen, there's clearly blood all over the animal. So that was truly beyond bizarre. Of course, yeah, I imagine that the producers just – that was the only footage they had. And so they didn't recognize that the voiceover was directly contradicting what was on the screen. Yeah, certainly, you know, and this is where the chupacabra sort of ties in with animal mutilations and cattle mutilations, particularly tied to extraterrestrials. This notion that animals can die of a variety of causes that aren't immediately obvious that can mimic blood loss. And in fact, for my book, I interviewed a forensic pathologist at the local university and had a long discussion with her about the different forensic processes that happen, you know, once a body starts to decay, you know, the blood pressure drops and livor mortis sets in, and so it's not necessarily obvious whether an animal has in fact been drained of blood, and so oftentimes what you find is that someone who, countless times in my research, I would find quotes from eyewitnesses who were absolutely convinced that their dog or their cat or their goat or their cattle had been drained of blood, apparently without having done any examination whatsoever. They just sort of saw it lying there and said, "Hey, must be drained of blood. Huh, look at that."
Are there any predators in Puerto Rico besides dogs that would be capable of doing these kind of killings? Are there foxes or coyotes or anything like that?
There are not. And that's actually, again, that's another sort of reason why the Puerto Rico is a unique area, because it is geographically isolated. There is a band of monkeys, rhesus monkeys, that were apparently let loose on the island in a scientific experiment, in fact, irony of ironies, that escaped and made their way into the jungle in Puerto Rico. And of course, there's a sizable amount of jungle area and wooded land where these things could hang out. Interestingly, I was looking into one of the theories proposed by a British researcher, John Downes of the Center for Fortean Zoology. He believes that at least some of the original predations in Puerto Rico were attributable to mongooses, and that some of them may have been killed in ways that wouldn't be obvious. The majority of the killings, which occur in the mainland, North America and elsewhere, you very much do have foxes, coyotes, dogs, feral dogs, things like that. But in the case of Puerto Rico specifically, no, you don't. I mean, other than, of course, you know, wild dogs and even tame dogs will sometimes kill animals.
And the examples of the chupacabra that have been found and tested, what have they been?
It depends. There's been, off the top of my head, I'm going to say there's been about 8 or 9 allegedly found chupacabra carcasses. Some of them have been sort of spirited away, sort of like the alien implants, you know, where the aliens come down and they leave implants in people, but somehow they're never around to be tested. So there's been a couple cases of where the alleged beastie has been gone. In fact, in the case I mentioned earlier in 2000 in Nicaragua, that's actually an instructive case because the animal, when the rancher Talavera took it to a local university, they concluded that it was just a dog. It was a common dog. And when he got – and Talavera refuted this. And when he got the bones back, he claimed that they had been switched. He claimed that there was a conspiracy and that the university had taken his real chupacabra bones and swapped out the dog bones to discredit him or put them on eBay. I don't know what he thought was going on. But so there's also a very interesting undercurrent of conspiracy theory in the chupacabra that again is unique to the chupacabra. You don't really find conspiracy theories wrapped up too much in Bigfoot mythology or Loch Ness Monster or whatever else. It's very much a part of the chupacabra mythology. So to answer Karen's question, in that particular case, the scientific answer was that it was in fact a dog. Talavera agreed that it's a dog, but he says that again it was switched for his real chupacabra. In other cases, probably the most famous case was in Cuero, Texas in 2007. There was a woman named Phyllis Canyon who claimed that there was the summer of the chupacabra, and she she found an animal that had been killed by the side of the road and had basically come back coyote. And she disputed that, and it became a long involved pissing match among various people who are both supporting and denying that. Other animals have been found to be usually they're dogs with mange, coyotes with mange. There's a fox. There was a chupacabra that was supposedly found in Turner, Maine. Sort of a bluish haze that turned out to be a dog of some sort. So essentially every time that science finds a chupacabra carcass or alleged chupacabra carcass, it always comes out to be a canid. It always comes out to be dog, fox, coyote, something along those lines.
Do you see the chupacabra as being something that can be solved as a phenomena?
I do. And the reason I say that is because the chupacabra, again, unlike most other sort of, you know, marquee monsters, is very new. It's only been around since 95. So we're talking about something that's only been living to the degree that it's living for 15 years. It's only been around. So
when your book comes out, do you think you're going to be able to stamp case closed on the top of it?
I do. I really do. And I don't take that lightly. I mean, as an investigator, I'm very used to saying in this particular case, I didn't disprove all ghosts. I didn't disprove that. But I think that when the book comes out, I think I've nailed every single element to it. And I think that the people who still believe that the chupacabra exists and is out there are going to have a very difficult time, unless they're addressing, unless they find gaping holes in my point by point analysis. I would feel comfortable in saying that I think I may have finally solved the mystery. And part of the key was again, as I mentioned before, one of the big mysteries is why it suddenly appeared in 95 Puerto Rico. It's just, animals just don't do that. I think that was kind of the last piece of the puzzle.
And you think you found an explanation for that?
I believe I did.
Well, I'm excited. I can't wait to read the book and find out what it is.
With a lot of the chupacabra stuff and the investigations, it wasn't all just, you know, armchair stuff. I mean, I actually went out and I did a expedition into the jungles of Nicaragua. Actually, in fact, in the current issue of 40 and Times magazine, in issue 257, January 2010, which is not exactly a competitor of Skeptical Inquirer, but you know, they have good pieces now and then. I actually have a piece current or forthcoming issue on my expedition to the jungles of Nicaragua to try and find the chupacabra.
I was going to ask you about that because you've made a number of treks to South America and you've written a few articles about this creature already. And from what you've told me, a lot of the locals and people that you've spoken with don't seem to really take it too seriously. The stories seem to be rather tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, that's one of the interesting facets to it, is that it oftentimes the locals don't take it nearly as seriously as the outsiders do. So, you know, something, you know, you'll read about something that says, you know, the people in this particular country or this particular region are terrified of this creature, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, all that makes good copy. But when you actually go there and you actually interview people, they're like, yeah, you know, it's a story, you know, people talk, things like that.
Do you think it's attraction for those places?
What'd you say?
Do you think it's a tourist attraction for these places?
In some cases, certainly, I mean, in the case of like Nicaragua, I would say no, because, you know, Mr. Talavera, I mean, he I think he enjoyed his 50 minutes of fame on TV. You know, in places like that, I don't think it's so much a tourist attraction. That is the case, I would say, for example, in America. If you look at the Cuero Chupacabra in Texas and the Blanco Chupacabra, there's actually been about three or four chupacabras that have been coming out of Texas in the last few years. In those cases, it's completely being exploited. I mean, you know, they're selling T-shirts that have the chupacabra on them. You can buy beer cozies and take your pick. Absolutely. That's America. There's, you know, and I interviewed and I went and met with Phyllis Canyon, the woman who has the chupacabra there. I was actually for a Monster Quest shoot a couple years back and talked to her at length. And she's very open about it. She's like, well, look, I mean, you know, why not? I found the chupacabra. I have it in my freezer. You can look at the dead head if you want. You can poke at it and smell it and whatever. And so why not? Why not print up some T-shirts for it? So, and whatever. I mean, that's, you know, that's fine.
So how many overall, how many sightings, and I say that, not how many animals were claimed to have been victims, but like how many people have seen the chupacabra that you're aware of?
I would say it's certainly dozens, if not hundreds. Again, depending on how credible and how complete an account you're looking at. Although, of course, many of them, I should add, are sort of follow-ups on earlier sightings. So, for example, in the case of Madeline Tolentino's original sighting in Puerto Rico, her sighting spawned many other, you could almost say copycat sightings, where, you know, all of a sudden people are seeing exactly what she saw. And so, you know, some of them you can link directly to original sightings other times. And again, it goes back to the nature of the chupacabra, which is anything weird is a chupacabra. I mean, there's a couple reports of some, I think it was a taxi driver I think it was in Chile, who said he saw some creature that was running next to him as he drove a taxi, and it sort of kept up with him, and then it flew into the sky. And he was interviewed by the local newspaper who said maybe he saw the chupacabra. Now, you know, his description, if you look at what he actually said, it has no connection whatsoever to anything that anybody would represent the chupacabra. But again, either the eyewitnesses or more often the press and news media themselves, they like a chupacabra story. So if anybody says they saw anything weird, hey, let's slap the name Chupacabra on it and sell some papers.
And do you find that if there's a sighting, that sets off a spate of other sightings at that same time?
Yes, very, very much so. And of course, that's typical for a lot of these creatures. I mean, I saw the exact same thing when I was investigating the Lake Champlain creature. And you look at the index, you know, sighting of Sandra Mansi. And right after her photo became public of the Lake Champlain monster champ, after her photo went public and she started telling her story, dozens of other people suddenly started seeing exactly the same thing. And you can trace it directly to the publicity of the sighting. So that's actually, you know, that's fairly common.
In your research, did you talk to anybody who works at Arecibo to find out if they do have a genetics lab there? I'm not really joking. I really was wondering if you did that.
I have not. A friend of mine works at Arecibo, or used to, Daniel Altshuler. My understanding is that being now a decommissioned radio observatory, I don't know if they're actually equipped for doing genetics experiments, but they might be. You know, and again, this, you know, there are. Again, this traces back to conspiracy theories and anti-American sentiment, which are both very much in evidence in Costa Rica. And,
In America.
And America and elsewhere. I don't know if the Aussies are pissed off at us, but
it's improving. It's improving.
it is true that there are U.S. military installations in Puerto Rico, and of course it's, you know, as a U.S. possession. So there is an element of truth to it insofar as I'm sure there are secret military things going on there. That doesn't mean that they created the Chupacabra. The same thing with Area 51. It actually is a real military base, and they do secret things there. It doesn't mean they're making UFOs. But of course, the conspiracy theorists like to sort of use that as a jumping off point.
I'll say. All right. Well, that's pretty cool, Ben. It looks like you did a pretty thorough job.
Well, I like to think so. It was one of the tough parts was when I was in Nicaragua. We were in this thatched hut, and my friend Chris and I, and we were hunting around for chupacabras, and we didn't find any, but we kept having this weird feeling like we were being watched, like something was looking at us, or I couldn't quite tell what it was. And we were, at this point, we were pretty far down the San Juan River. So we were, there's no electricity there, no running water, anything else like that. And so we're basically in this hot, sticky jungle with howler monkeys and jaguars and tapirs and everything else. And as it turns out, we were being watched by a vampire.
No.
Please explain.
Well, in our hut, there were two vampire bats that had been circling above us, and I didn't actually find this out until the last evening when I finally caught them because you just happened to have the light on right, and I took a whole bunch of photos. I had my digital camera, and so I kept trying, because I kept hearing something, I kept sensing something was like, something was going on above us, but again, because there was no electricity. But then the flashlights we had they were adequate, but they certainly weren't fast enough to catch anything flying around. So I eventually managed to get a photograph of one of the bats that was flying above us, and it was, in fact, a vampire bat.
That's cool. How big are those?
Well, this one was probably not more than 7 or 8 inches across, although it could have been a foot or so. I mean, it's decent size. I had actually seen vampire bats before in Ecuador. When I was staying there, I was staying in the jungle out there, and some of the dogs and horses had been victims of vampire bats, and they had little patches about the size of a quarter that were sort of all the fur was worn off, and so it was this very distinctive round thing, and if you look closely, you could see it looked like sort of cross hatches from like scratches, like a cat or something. it looked weird, and so I actually had sort of recognized some of the, I'd recognized what evidence of vampire bat looks like, and so luckily they didn't attack me, but they're actually not that dangerous. They were kind of cute.
So after all your research, what do you think the chupacabra is?
Read the book, Lake. It's in chapter 14. No, I mean, essentially, it won't come as any surprise to anybody. Certainly, anyone who's listening to this show or knows my work that I'm skeptical of it. The chupacabra is basically a generic name for a wide variety of things that people can't explain, ranging from creatures that supposedly have, animals that have no blood left in them, to weird things that they see out of the corner of their eyes, to dead mangy dogs out in the Texas desert. So in a nutshell, that's basically what it is. But in a broader sense, the chupacabra is just another incarnation of the vampire story, which has been around for centuries, and I'm sure will continue on. So it's sort of all things to everyone.
So you were saying this is...
Sorry, my little Slade plug. Go ahead.
Slade reference, yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry.
You were saying that the chupacabra is something that we can solve. Do you think because there are so many varied explanations that might make it more difficult for people to accept these natural explanations?
Because it covers such a wide variety of phenomena? Or?
Yes, yeah. Because there are so many explanations, do you think that will make it a bit more difficult for people to accept that this has been solved?
Right. Yeah, honestly, I don't think so, because I've laid it out very well, and I think that I'm very much aware of what the other side slash believers are saying about it. And so I've gone out of my way to address all of those. For people who are saying, but hold on here, what about this? There's the answer for that. I think that by the end, people will say this mystery has basically been solved. In some ways, what's frustrating yet fascinating about it is that people will still see the chupacabra. That really has no bearing on whether people will continue to see it or not. Because of its very nature, people will still find animals that they think are drained of blood. People will still see weird things out of the corner of their eye. And certainly if you believe in the chupacabra, you're still going to slap that label on it. So, it's like the rubber duck syndrome in skepticism, where if you explain something, most people can agree that you've explained it. That doesn't mean it goes away.
Yeah, I mean, the cattle mutilations are still being considered a mystery here in the U.S., so...
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if the chupacabra is going to end up actually supplanting the cattle mutilations via aliens or cattle mutilations via satanic cults. It may become the new popular explanation for what I think are mostly normal ranch predations and ranch scavenger work.
Mm-hmm.
Well, since it's a relatively new character, that might, I guess it's still got a lot of spreading to go, really, in society. It's just a very new creature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that was one of the things, as I said, that made it, in my mind, solvable. I mean, there's no way, for as much as I know about lake monsters and other creatures, there's no way that I could say that, you know, that has been solved any. I mean, I can certainly explain individual sightings and particular types of evidence and, you know, on down the laundry list. But because the chupacabra is so confined to a particular time, a particular place, particular forms, that I think that in some ways that parameter makes it a soluble mystery.
All right.
I guess like ghosts and psychics and other phenomena, people will always think that their story is the real thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it's actually kind of funny. You have, in some cases, you have a lot of infighting among chupacabra, just as there's, you know, as both of you know, there's plenty of infighting among the Bigfoot buffs. There's also, you know, Bigfoot sighting and sniping and you know, all sorts of stuff, backbiting and sniping with the chupacabra folks as well. So you've got people who are claiming they have the chupacabra. No, they have the chupacabra. Well, all right. Well,
that's all the questions I have.
Okay.
Awesome. Well, that was fun.
Me too.
We should. Yeah. we should have you back as on our show.
Monster Talk.
Today you've been listening to Monster Talk as we interviewed our own Benjamin Radford, who just finished his manuscript on Chupacabra, as well as an article in Britain's Fortean Times magazine on the same subject. Radford's the managing editor of Skeptical Inquirer, and you can find his regular columns there and at livescience.com, at radfordbooks.com, and on Facebook. Karen Stolzno writes at her Bad Language blog, CSI's Naked Skeptic, SkepBitch, and can be found on Facebook and Twitter. And I'm Blake Smith, and you can find my writing on Atlanta's Examiner, as well as Twitter and Facebook, where I write under the name Dr. Atlantis. Once again, we wish to thank the fine people at Skeptic Magazine for supporting Monster Talk. Be sure and tune in next time when we'll discuss giants, and you'll hear Dr. Kenny Fader say,
I am one badass motherfucker when it comes to giants, man. That's what I'm about.
Music for today's episode by F&A Holes, and Monster Talk's theme is by Peach Stealing Monkeys, both available via podshow.com. Also, be sure and drop by iTunes and give us a review or a rating. It's a great free way to give us feedback and help other people find the show. Thanks a lot.
Want to stay abreast of the latest from Skeptic Magazine and the Skeptic Society? Want cutting-edge skeptical articles delivered straight to your inbox every week? Then subscribe to eSkeptic, the free electronic newsletter of the Skeptic Society. Visit skeptic.com to sign up.
The Chupacabra.